Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is brought to you by High Echelon. High Echelon PC is a nationwide CPA firm based in Atlanta focused on a great client experience. High Echelon provides top quality work with total transparency so clients always know exactly what they're getting. They believe accounting doesn't need to be complicated and that clients should get the experience they deserve, which includes top-notch accounting, tax, and payroll services, timely communication, complete data flow, and the best automation security. Book a call or drop them a line on their website, highecheloncpa.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Blue Pineapple Travel. Blue Pineapple Travel is an agency of experienced travel advisors who help you design the perfect trip. Blue Pineapple Travel advisors are all well-traveled and knowledgeable, and they will be your advocates from start to finish. They love to help people plan their travel, whether it's for a race, a family trip, a weekend getaway, or the trip of a lifetime. Their goal is to match you with the trip that you want. Relaxation or adventure, traveling solo or with a group, inside the U.S. or abroad, Blue Pineapple Travel can plan exactly the trip that you want. Find them online at BluePineappleTravel.com and see some of the great places that folks who have worked with Blue Pineapple Travel go on their Instagram, at Blue Pineapple Travel. MPE Coaching is the coaching arm of the podcast. If you like what you hear here and you need help preparing for a big goal, reach out to us at PleasantPodcast@gmail.com or MPEcoach@gmail.com. Trail races, marathons, triathlons, multi-day relays, we have helped people get ready for all of these things. Our approach is rooted in proven exercise physiology, but we also bring our own experience as coaches and athletes to bear. We specialize in helping adults with busy schedules find ways to build fitness and accomplish their goals. Whether you're looking to complete your first multi-sport race, qualify for Boston or Kona, set a new marathon PR, or simply become a healthier, happier athlete, we can help. Click on the coaching link on the podcast website, www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Elemental Altitude Training Center. Elemental Altitude is Atlanta's only altitude training facility. At Elemental Altitude state-of-the-art indoor training center, they are capable of simulating elevation of up to 24,000 feet. Training in the thinner air and lack of oxygen prompts an increase in red blood cells, meaning that more oxygen can be delivered to your working muscles on race day. Athletes undertaking all sorts of goals, from rugged mountain climbs to flat sea level marathons to Ironman triathlons, train in the hypoxic environment created at Elemental Altitude. I trained there several times ahead of my successful race at the London Marathon in 2022. And Michelle trained there extensively for the Silver Rush 50 in 2023, her first ever 50-mile race that spent a lot of time over 10,000 feet. In addition, Elemental Altitude hosts a variety of physiological testing, such as sweat testing, blood lactate testing, VO2 max testing, and a variety of metabolic testing, which can tell you your resting metabolic rate and the types and amounts of fuels you are burning at different training and racing intensities. Drop them a line at info@elementalaltitude.com if you have questions or to set up an appointment. Their website is elementalaltitude.com. And finally, our new sponsor for 2024 is Bright Hair. Bright Hair is a creative design studio offering branding, graphic design, marketing, and website design and support. They designed our Most Pleasant Exhaustion logo, and they are helping to build our website right now. The folks at Bright Hair are patient and thorough, and they listen to your feedback. Their expertise has been critical to our getting our branded merchandise shop off the ground in early 2024. Be sure to reach out to them with any graphic design or marketing needs that you have. You can find them at brighthair.com. That's bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, hair, H-A-R-E.com, or on Instagram at bright.hair. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast possible. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast brought to you by MPE Coaching, High Echelon PC, Bright Hair, Blue Pineapple Travel, and Elemental Altitude Training Center. My name is George Darden. I'm an endurance athlete and coach here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a father of twin boys and a college professor.
My name is Michelle Frank. I'm also an endurance athlete here in Atlanta, Georgia, a mom to three girls and a CPA.
And we have the distinct pleasure today of bringing on Doug Olson, recent finisher of the Mount Mitchell Heartbreaker 50 miler. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, thanks for having me. As they say in sports radio, long time, first time. Yeah, happy to be here. Excited to talk about it.
Doug completed a week and a half ago a hell of a race, the Mount Mitchell Heartbreak 50 miler. And we're looking forward to hearing all about that. Includes a climb, and it's only the second of three major climbs over the highest point in the eastern United States, that of course being Mount Mitchell in western North Carolina. Looking forward to hearing all about it. But before we do that, Doug, kind of give us a little bit of background, like where'd you come from? When'd you start running? All that sort of thing.
I live in Durham, North Carolina right now. I've been here since 2010. Prior to that, had been a lifelong New Englander. Grew up in Connecticut, went to school in Massachusetts, that sort of thing. I did not do any kind of running really at all growing up. I really just kind of got into it kind of maybe late 2016, early 2017. Like I think I did like truly the first race I've ever done in the fall of 2017, a trail race here in Durham that sadly is no longer existing. But just kind of caught the bug from there. I've started running with a good friend of mine and neighbor, Ross, and then we also got involved with our local F3 group and have met many more running friends from then and have developed a pretty good group where we do a bunch of silly things like Blue Ridge Relay and that sort of thing. And then there's a bunch of there's a small subset of us that got into the ultra and trail side of things that started doing other stuff like that. So it's been a fun journey.
Very
That's
cool, very
awesome.
cool.
I was going to first thank him for meeting our quota of mentioning the Blue Ridge Relay right off the bat. Like, we have to
Yeah,
do that
well, I
at
mean,
least
that's
once
if
every episode. That's why
it
you're
weren't for the
here,
Blue Ridge
right?
Relay, I would never have listened to the podcast, I don't
I
think.
know. So I want to make
Very
sure.
first episode was that I listened to was when you had Ken Savensky on, and I saw
Awesome.
that somewhere. I was like, oh, I would like to hear an interview with him, and have been listening ever since. So
He was
awesome.
great. We
Awesome.
got an I got an email from him yesterday since he's also the race director of the Tobacco Road Relay coming up in a couple of weeks. I thought about mentioning to him, hey, Kim, we want to bring you on the podcast again this year, but I didn't mention. I'm gonna hold my keep my powder dry there. But yeah, be listening out because he's probably gonna come on again.
Very good.
Doug, do you have any background at all in sports, like any sports through high school, or are you really
Oh,
just an adult turned runner?
I played basketball growing up through about sophomore year of high school and started playing golf if runners consider that a sport. I don't know. My
We have
freshman
some big
year.
runners that consider it a sport for sure.
Yeah.
One comes to mind.
Started playing golf freshman year of high school and played that throughout high school and that sort of thing. But yeah,
Yeah.
no considerable athletic achievements
So when you
in
say
that
you caught the
area.
bug, what does that mean? Like what happened in 2016 that made you even, I don't even know if you went and bought a pair of running shoes, but how did it, yeah.
Yeah, I think I just, for whatever the reason, started getting into fitness in general around then, and it's like, oh well, I should probably do a little bit of running too. I did not expect to be any good at it at all or like it, and was pleasantly surprised by both. I would not say that I'm a particularly good runner, but I am better at it than I expected, and I also enjoyed it more, and then really started to enjoy it even more, like with the group that has come together, and then especially running on trails, like we have a nice set of trails very close to us, and once I got out there and saw that, and I really started to enjoy that even more. So
Very
cool.
cool. Very good. Very good. I know this was your first 50 miler. You mentioned getting into trail races and that sort of thing. Was this your idea, or was this like one of your buddies' idea, one of your friends' ideas?
I think we had had a 50 miler in general, just as checking the box as the next step in the progression for a while. I Several of us Had signed up for a different 50 miler in the fall of 2022, the Pilot Mountain Hanging Rock 50 miler, and that got canceled at the last minute because that was the weekend that the remnants of Hurricane Ian rolled through
Oh,
and
wow.
just completely washed out. I was literally like getting in the car to drive out there when I saw the email from the race director that they
Oh, geez.
were canceling it.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think that it's just been something that's been on the radar, and decided that this spring was probably the best time to do it. You know, that in training for that other race, you know, we realized that the peak of your training hits, you know, in the middle of the summer
Yeah.
here, which, you know, is a little tough. Several of us like the idea of trying to do the training more in the winter for a spring race. So then just started looking around at things that were, you know, at least somewhat local and looked cool, and landed on this one. You know, the course obviously looked incredible, and it was pretty
Incredibly
generous amount.
difficult. Like,
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your perspective, I guess, but it was going to be epic, that's for sure. It's just how enjoyable it was going to be, but also, like, you know, 16 and a half hour cutoff was pretty generous. Yeah, and then just the more I looked into it, the more fun it sounded, or it might be. Yeah, that's where we landed and pulled the trigger, and
made
then
it
I started
happen.
freaking out. I was like, how am I going to do this? So maybe I should get some professional help here.
I feel like that's the right order, though. You know,
Totally.
I feel like you go ahead and sign up, then you freak out and get the help and all that sort of thing, right? I feel like it's good to go ahead and sign up before you start having all of those really kind of practical
Yeah. It
concerns.
was clearly something that, you know, I thought was very much on the edge of my capabilities, which, you know, in a lot of ways is pretty cool, right? Like, I think there are other ones that we could have chosen that, like, oh yeah, this, you know, as long as I put in a decent amount of work, should be able to finish. But this one was like, maybe not if I don't, like, you know, really put in the work and also things go pretty well. So
Yeah. So
cool.
you have the Blue Ridge Relay history, but was there any progression like from 2016 5K, 10K, marathon, 50K, or were we just going from got the bug, like the Blue Ridge Relay, going to tackle a 50 miler over the highest point of the United States and the Southeast
I like how
region?
we keep coming back to
It's a huge, I want to make sure he gets all the credit for this race. This is, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like a seasoned ultra runner, but this race terrifies me. And the fact that George wants to do anything with the word Mount Mitchell in front of it next year
that.
also terrifies me.
No, fair, fair.
There's definitely been a progression. That first race I did in 2017, that was a 10 miler kind of right here in the backyard. And then that race, it was called the Race Across Durham, also had a trail marathon associated with it. So after a couple of us did the 10 miler, we're like, oh, well, you know, that was a lot of fun. Like, maybe we should give the marathon a try. It took us a couple of years to make that happen because I think in 2018 we'd signed up for it for the marathon distance. And that was also a year where the fall was extremely wet. Like, we had multiple hurricane remnants come through, and then just was, even apart from that, was super wet. And so the parts of the course that were further east of the 10 mile part that I'd already done, they're close to the Falls Lake, were completely underwater. So
Oh,
they
wow.
audibled kind of late in the game to making the marathon distance be just an out and back on the 10 mile course, which
Yep.
is also where all the hills are. So it was like shorter race, but you have to do the hard part twice. But then they also, you know, of course, gave you a credit for the marathon the following year.
That's what
So,
I'm
and then
talking
of
about.
course signed up for that the following year. So completed that in that would have been in 19, and then shortly after that did a 50K in early 2020. out in the eastern part of the state, Wilmington area, Southern
Cool.
Tour, which that was super fun as well. And then, like I said, I'd signed up for that Pilot Mountain race that got canceled. And then when that happened, me and another friend, John, kind of audibled as a replacement race to a 40 miler. That was a couple of weeks after, but much, much flatter. So did that in late 2022. And then the other thing we've done is several of us kind of got fascinated by the backyard ultra format.
Oh no.
Decided to do a little homemade modified version of that. So that's
Oh
something
wow.
that we've been doing for 3 years now. Rather than the 4.1 mile loop every hour, we do, it's dead flat. It's on the tobacco trail here. It's a
Okay.
1.5 mile out and back, and you do that every 20 minutes on the 20s. And so started doing that. I think the first year we did it, we only had like 10 or 12 of us, and we've gotten up to, I don't know, 25 of us or so. But this past year, I did not win it, but I did do 52 miles or something in that.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, so that's been fun too. That's been a being a little homemade backyard race director thing has been fun for
Grassroots.
the possum scurry is what we call it for reasons that are completely inscrutable. Yeah, so I've been doing that for a few years and have progressed on that too. I think the first year was the year I actually did win it. I think that was like 37 miles, and then finished second. The second year was 42 something, and then this year finished third. So like I've been running more miles, but finishing further back in the pack. Yeah, and so that has been the progression overall. And yeah, we've been doing the Blue Ridge just about every year, and also George mentioned the Tobacco Road Relay. We've been doing that as well. That's here, right here in our backyard. So that's been a bunch of fun. So
That's
yeah,
awesome running.
finally figured it out, the 50 miler we wanted to do this spring, and there it is.
And there it is.
That's
So
awesome.
very good. So let's talk then about Mount Mitchell specifically, about the Heartbreaker itself. So as we've alluded to a few times, it has all of these climbs. 12,000 feet is ultimately what your Strava said. Can you tell us a little bit about the course? And I know you previewed it. Tell us a little bit about the course and about your previewing of the course.
Obviously just looking at the elevation profile before seeing any of it was fairly intimidating. So definitely wanted to, if we could make it work, preview some of it. So managed to make two trips out to see different parts of the course, basically the first two real big climbs. So shortly after Christmas, went out to see the Mount Mitchell section, and had excellent weather that day, like while we were running, but had rained for 2 days straight prior to that. So it was just absolutely soaking wet. So our feet were completely soaked within 2 miles or so.
Oh yeah.
The climb up Mitchell is kind of broken up into two sections. The first like 4 mile section or so is relatively steep and definitely constant, but nothing too crazy. And then you hit this stretch of, I think, right around 2 miles of the horse trail, which is pretty flat. It almost makes like a little waist belt around the midsection of the mountain, and multiple trails that go up to the top of Mitchell come down to different points on that horse trail. But for the actual course route, you're on that for 2-ish miles or so, and it should be, just by the terrain, very runnable because it's almost entirely flat. It's rooty and rocky and that sort of thing, but the sheer face of the mountain is directly to your left, and water is just like rushing down it and then sitting there on the flat trail and soaking in. So it was, in addition to being puddles everywhere. There was also like 3 inches of mud in lots of places.
Mm.
Your foot would go in and you would be concerned that your shoe might not come back out,
Oh,
kind of
gosh.
thing. And so you do that for a while, and then the final ascent is immediately after you turn off the horse trail is the worst half mile on the course. This climb up to the first peak called Big Tom, and it's insane. I mean, the day we went out there for the course preview, the climb up there is, I don't know, it's at least 40% grade in lots of places, and very, very narrow and rutted out, and lots of rocks. And it was so wet that day that you were also doing that in 4 inches of water the whole way. And then the very last, just to top it off, the very last little bit of that, like all the rocks and roots and stuff like that go away, but it's still super steep. So it's just like mud. So you're just like trying to scramble up, a 30 something percent incline in mud. So then you finally get to the top of that. And then there's a few different peaks before you get to Mitchell. And so it just kind of rolls up and down. And there's, some small bits of gnarly terrain there. There's two little fixed rope sections where there's just like huge boulders that you can't go around any other way. So they just have ropes bolted down that you use to get up that. But those are like 100 feet each or something like that. So it's not super far. But and the day we went up there for the course preview, it had completely cleared out, and it's like unbelievable views up top there, like in all directions.
Cool.
Really, really cool. And then you finally make your way up to the actual, observation tower on Mitchell, and of course you have full 360 view there.
Yeah.
That was great. We had an incredible day. Little intimidating for sure, but that was a ton of fun. And then maybe like 6 weeks before the race, we went out to see the other climb, Snook's Nose, it's called. And that one, there may not be any part on it that's quite as bad as that little ascent up to Big Tom, but it is more consistently steeper than even the whole rest of the Mitchell climb. It I think it goes 3,000 feet in 3 miles or something like that. It's big. There's one little plateau section where you also get a nice view, and then you get you cross over the Blue Ridge Parkway at the Green Knob Overlook, and really, really nice view there as well. And then start to come down from there. And the first part of the descent from there is also like
Right
pretty
down.
gnarly. Then it kind of chills out and it becomes runnable, that sort of thing. But that was really good to go out and see that. If I had never seen it before and just got there at mile 7 of a 50 miler and thought that's what I was in for all day, and like not knowing when it was going to end, that would have
Right.
been quite quite disturbing,
And knowing
probably.
that you had the two other climbs looming.
So yeah, and then as far as the rest of the course goes, it's kind of basically just it's a big loop, with that starts and ends at Camp Greer in Old Fort. And that's kind of at like 6 o'clock on the clock, like the furthest point south of the loop. But really you're just kind of finding ways to link up these three climbs. And so the most of the intermediate sections between the climbs, some of it is fire road, some of it is other trail, but like much, much less technical and difficult and that sort of thing. And I wasn't we didn't We hadn't seen anything beyond Mount Mitchell, which is only about the halfway point of the race. So the whole second half of the race was new to us. So wasn't sure what to expect from the third climb. It was difficult, but definitely not as crazy as the first two. If you were a really good runner or not in the midst of a 50 miler, then or both, then that probably would have, that climb probably would have even been runnable. We were hiking it for sure, but yeah. And then after that, it's largely downhill, and there were some real good running sections coming down from there, and was very, very happy that on race day I was actually feeling good enough to be able to run on those sections. So cool. that felt really good. And then the part that that made us laugh certainly was it looks on the elevation profile when it's stretched out on a 50-mile scale that it's basically all downhill after the all the way to the finish after the third climb up Bald Knob.
But yeah, it looks like 14 miles.
Yeah. If you look really closely, there is like a little bump.
Yeah, there's a little hump there.
That little bump.
Like before 45?
No, yeah, talking about that last one, like at 46.
Yeah.
It looks like it goes up a little bit and comes back down.
Yeah. It's immediately after the last aid station. The last aid station is at mile 43, 44, something like that. My watch was definitely running a little ahead mileage-wise. So if you're looking at my Strava, it probably says the mileage, you know, 45, 46 kind of thing. But, you know, it looks like nothing at all. It's like a 900-foot climb.
That's just rude.
Yeah.
That's awful.
You've had these three monster climbs, and you're like, all right, it's all downhill from here. And then they throw in another one at mile 43. Thanks.
Okay, Doug. So with the course preview, you mentioned at the beginning that when you signed up for this, you kind of were like, okay, I need some real help and real coaching. Yeah. So how do you feel like the professional that you hired, what did you do differently in building to this race with a real training plan versus kind of everything you had done in the prior few years to run all these other races, some of which were also an ultra distance race?
Don't say too many bad things about me here, Doug, please.
No, I
have. Oh, are we supposed to tell everybody? Nothing bad to
say. I thought it was really, really helpful. Had I been doing this on my own, you know, I probably would have just gotten some, you know, generic training plan out there or whatever. I don't know whether it would have been the just overall volume that George gave me, but I'm almost certain it would have not had the same kind of structure. I just thought that especially the, you know, fatigue resistance and durability stuff that, you know, George is focused on for me was, I thought that was just really, really helpful. Like all the stuff of, you know, almost every easy run you had me doing strides at the end. And
isn't,
you know,
it awful?
And
did you hear that, Michelle?
And, you know, working in that medium long run just about every week. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the long run stacks on the weekend with the notes and Training Peaks that says, you know, make sure you're not shuffling at the end. Like all that was in mind for sure. And I do think it was really, really helpful because, like I said, at the end of the race, I was still feeling pretty good and actually able to run. And, you know, had I been doing this on my own, maybe I could have still finished, but I feel like it wouldn't have been with, you know, an hour and 40 minutes to spare. And it probably would have been a whole lot closer to, you know, self-destruction than I actually was. So,
I feel like when you're kind of, you're running as group based, right? And you're always out like with your buddies, but when you shift to a training plan with a coach, your accountability sort of has to shift between, oh, I want to run with my friends, but I'm paying this guy to write a training plan for me, so I need to be accountable to that. What was that dynamic like for you and the guys that you run with?
Good question.
Did they just tag along and use the training? Or
yeah, sometimes.
I don't know anybody who does that.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly weren't doing all the strides I was doing. yeah, it was like, we would, if it was a group run where I was doing strides at the end, you know, somewhere with 20 minutes left, I'd be reminding everyone like, hey, Anybody want to do strides? And occasionally people would, mostly they didn't. And then, you know, some of the actual workouts you gave me, it was pretty common actually that I could rope a couple of people into doing those along with me. And
that's awesome.
People enjoyed that kind of thing, you know, because like,
yeah,
you know, we'll make up a workout or pull something from the internet or whatever here and there when we feel like doing a workout. But mostly, you know, in our group run situations, it's very unstructured and that kind of thing. So to have that structure was a nice change. And, you know, cool. They were, you know, it wasn't the same thing every week. And yeah, it was good. And then the long runs on the weekend, sometimes I would be with people, sometimes I wasn't, you know. I certainly ran alone more than usual in this training block, but you know, I wasn't alone the whole time. You know, I had folks with me along the way on lots of it. And yeah, it was good.
We also knowing that F3, because you mentioned them before, is a big part of your endurance sporting life. We kept those on the schedule, right? And we kept going to those, and knowing that, did the other guys, because I know that there were two friends that also did this with you, are those guys F3 guys too?
Yeah. Just about everybody I run with these days either, you know, came into F3 along the same time as me, or I met through the group. Both John and Randy, who are the two guys that I ran the race with, I met both of them through the F3 group. So did a good amount of running with the two of them throughout this thing. Their training schedules were different from mine, certainly. And actually John nowadays, when I first met him, he lived in Durham, but he lives in Greensboro these days. So didn't see him quite as much. But.
Gotcha. Very good. So three massive climbs plus one bonus obnoxious climb at the end.
Yeah.
The weather was pretty good for you. But what were some of the challenges you faced actually out on course?
Yeah. I mean, the weather was a real variable in the days leading up. Like there, mm-hmm. we had multiple emails from the race director about possibilities of having to reroute the course and that sort of thing, because mm-hmm. there was definitely rain coming at some point, and it was, and earlier in the week leading up, it was looking like the temperature was going to be lower. So there was a, you know, I think at one point there was talk of there being multiple inches of snow.
Oh my gosh.
That can happen, you know, in the higher elevations like at Mitchell, and which would have, you know, they would have closed the state park there and almost certainly closed that section of the Blue Ridge Parkway that you cross over before even heading that direction. So they had all these contingency plans in place for a different course, but ultimately it worked out that we were able to run the full course. The temperature went up. All the rain happened the prior night, which, you know, so we're laying there in bed the night before the race, hearing the rain just like coming down on the roof.
Oh,
of course,
man.
You're not sleeping because you're all like jacked up. So the rain made the entire Mitchell section a mess. It was just as bad as the preview day we went out there. I was really hoping that at least the horse trail part was going to be runnable this time. And even during the race, you know, in the first, you know, 15 miles, I was, the whole time I was noticing that it seemed to be drier than I thought it was going to be. So I was kind of hopeful, like, oh, maybe we'll actually get some decent conditions there. And yeah, that was not the case. We got to the horse trail. And again, it was a swimming pool and mud and all that. And we had made really good time through the first aid station, we were they the cutoff at the first aid station was super generous. So, you know, if we didn't get ahead of the clock there, then that was going to be a real problem. But we did get well ahead of it. I think we were an hour and a half ahead of the cutoff at the first aid station. And but we gave it almost all back on the whole Mitchell section.
Sure.
And, you know, we got to just the little water station right at the start of the horse trail. And, you know, the guys there who definitely got the short end of the volunteer stick, by the way. That was a tough spot to be. They're like, okay, another 4 miles or so. And I'm looking at the trail and I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, oh boy. You know, cause I knew it was going to be a tough 4 miles and we had given quite a bit of time back. So that was almost certainly the low point of the entire thing was, you know, thinking that we were going to be fighting the cutoff there and having to deal with some difficult conditions. But
that's a tough mental place. Michelle has talked about that when you worry that you're going to miss a cutoff and the way that can weigh on you can really sap a lot of joy out of the process, you know?
I got pretty quiet and a little bit frustrated during that part, but I think we did manage to the aid station at the top of Mitchell, maybe 15 to 20 minutes ahead of the cutoff. And then I looked to see what the next one was. And it was, I think it was 9 miles largely downhill. And we had almost 3 hours. And I was like, okay, I actually think we're in decent shape now. So yeah. Big sigh of relief there. And they had us all. And by that point, that was the only part of the day where the weather, like while we were running, was not so great. The temperature dropped quite a bit. It was like fully socked in with fog and some rain and all that. It was probably, you know, in the mid 30s at the most there, and blowing, you know, 30 mile an hour gusts kind of thing. Yeah. So there's like a little picnic shelter where they had the aid station set up. So they had everybody like huddled in there, and all the food they were cooking at the aid stations and all that kind of stuff. And it was quite the scene there.
I apologize for saying you had pretty good weather. You clearly did not.
The weather leading up was certainly suboptimal. Mm. And the you know, hour or two we were on Mount Mitchell was, you know, not great, but it wasn't terrible.
Okay.
And then it cleared up very nicely for the last couple hours of the race. So
very good. You know, very it could have been way worse. I think I had in my head, because you had told me in the days leading up that, hey, they might be actually changing the course. And the course change was significant. One might even say catastrophic. Like it was like an out and back on a fire road that had very little elevation change. I mean, it was a radical departure from what the actual course was.
You would have still gone up Snook's Nose, but it was basically like go to the top and then turn around and come right back down.
Right.
And it was gonna, and obviously don't go anywhere near Mount Mitchell anymore. Right. And that's the whole name of the race.
Right. And so I think as soon as you had texted me on Friday and said, we're on for the full course, I was like, okay, weather's good. Clearly weather wasn't good. It was just good enough.
Good enough, exactly.
So very good. Very good.
Okay, Doug, tell us a little bit about like how you fueled for this. We want to talk fuel, gear, and shoes, of course.
Sure.
I did mention on a previous podcast that I knew you wore a lot of ultras, but you didn't wear those for this race. But let's just talk about what gear you used, you know, anything that you experimented with and kind of why you chose what you chose. And then, of course, we want to know all about fueling and the shoes.
Yeah, so I wore two pair of the same kind of shoe over the course of the day. The Saucony Exodus Ultra. I got a pair of them maybe late summer of last year, and was just I they're just have been so comfortable for me. I really, really enjoyed them. The outsole is probably a little less aggressive than a fair amount of other trail shoes. I have a couple pairs of Topo trail shoes these days prior to that, and those have the Vibram outsoles, and they're
Sure.
definitely a little more aggressive, but man, I spent a lot of time on my feet in those
I
over the
believe you.
last few months, and my feet never hurt.
That's awesome.
I think they're the only trail shoe I've had that have the Piba foam in them, and I don't know if it was that or something else about the shoe, but yeah, I just found them extremely comfortable. So I was willing to, make the trade-off of maybe a little bit of less traction for that level of comfort. So yeah, and I have, and because I liked that first pair I got so much, I went out and got a second pair and put those in my last drop bag. And it worked out nicely because, the first part of the course, as I was saying, was kind of drier than I expected. So my feet stayed dry for, the first few hours. As soon as we got to the Mitchell section, then it was full wet feet.
Sure.
But then I was pretty confident that by the time we got to that last aid station, we were going to be through all the messy parts, and that is how it worked out. So, at the, I think it's like mile 33-ish aid station is where I changed shoes and had, basically fully dry feet for the whole rest of the race. And that was game changing for sure. I thoroughly enjoyed getting out of the wet and muddy ones.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, and I both times I was wearing the Balega blister resist socks. I'm also a big fan of those for that kind of conditions. I mean, the most important piece of gear obviously was the MPE hat.
Oh yeah. There you go. That
And I
hat
did
is
wear
a
that
good
the whole time.
idea.
I wasn't sure whether it was going to be temperature wise okay enough to be, just wearing a regular hat, but turned out it was. Even the even when it got a little cold, I think I threw my little like neck buff thing up around my ears and put the hat on top of that, and that was probably only for 20 minutes or something like that. But yeah, did wear the hat the whole time, so
Awesome.
that's important.
Very good. It's very important.
You got a
Absolutely. I noticed you had it forward sometimes, you had it backwards sometimes, multi-purpose.
I have a Ultimate Direction vest with the front soft flasks,
Okay.
and it's one of the I like lower capacity ones. Like it doesn't have a ton of room for a lot of gear in the back. And we did have to bring a little bit of extra required gear. Like we were already, from the start, we needed to have a jacket, but then they added a requirement for an extra base layer and that kind of thing. I actually never touched that. I was good enough with the jacket on or off the whole time.
What'd you take in that vest? What'd you fuel with while you were on the course?
Yeah, so drank Tailwind pretty much the whole time. I way overpacked. You pack your fears, I guess is the quote I've heard. So apparently I was terrified.
Explain.
Well, so I basically just counted up, how many aid stations there were, and said, okay, if I am gonna refill both bottles with Tailwind at every single aid station, how many little Ziploc baggies of Tailwind do I need? And I think that ended up being 16. I think I used half of them because I wasn't drinking that fast. And there was one or two times where I just filled the bottle with water instead of
Water.
Tailwind. I'd have one bottle with water, one bottle with Tailwind kind of thing. So yeah, had that the whole time. And then a couple different kinds of gels. I had several of the SIS beta fuel gels, just because they're a little bigger. They're 160 calories.
Yeah.
They're not super tasty. In fact, I get the neutral ones. because I actually find no flavor is better than the other flavors. Mm-hmm. Several of those, I did not manage to actually keep count of how many gels I consumed, but so yeah, those, and then I also had some Huma gels, mostly the ones, the mocha flavor that have some caffeine in them. Mm-hmm. And then I also like to have some real food. So I had, there was a couple of oatmeal cream pies involved.
Yum.
which are quite
you
the nice treat.
To our Ragnar Relay recap.
yeah. And then these little mini pancakes, silver dollar pancakes from Costco. They come in a little, you know, individually wrapped 2-packs. I like that. Those are super easy to eat and pretty tasty. A chicken quesadilla from Taco Bell from the day before. That was in my drop bag.
Oh, gosh.
What? A day old Taco Bell chicken quesadilla?
Yep. Yeah. So we did that. My friend John did that both of our scout trips. Like basically when we got to the top of the mountain, he busted out his day old quesadilla. And after the first time, he enjoyed that so much. He's like, you got to try it, man. So when we did the Snook's Nose trip, I did it as well. And everything went fine. And it was delicious. So did that as well. I think I had mine at the top of Mitchell. And then supplemented with aid station snacks as well, you know, potato chips and peanut butter pretzels. And in the picnic shelter at Mitchell, they were doing hot broth and ramen noodles. So I had a little sip on that. And I think there were some M&Ms at the end, but I think I'd stayed ahead of it reasonably well. I had the alarm on my watch, making sure I ate at least every 45 minutes. Between the like supplementing with aid station snacks, I was probably eating more frequently than that, but you know, just kind of as a minimum, I was doing that. The only slight criticism I might have of the course, it was extremely well marked. The whole thing was really organized. But if you are a fan of porta potties, there were I think None? There was one on the course. I think at the first aid station or the first drop bag station at like 15-ish miles, there was one there. And I was really kind of hoping there was one at the where
Even
I changed
across the parkway that, like, there weren't.
What's that?
Usually when you cross the parkway, there's like they put them on a road, nothing.
Nope.
Wow.
It's possible that the bathrooms at Mount Mitchell could have been open. We didn't check that out. They were not when we went there on our own, but maybe for the event they opened them. I'm not sure. I was really kind of hoping there would be one at the last drop bag spot at like mile 33, but it was not.
After that day old chicken quesadilla, I bet you were hoping there was a bathroom.
Major props especially to like all the women that did this race to like not have a porta potty anywhere on the whole course is good for you.
We just kind of get used to whatever in the woods. Sorry, guys. But if you were to go back and just think about everything and how the day played out, is there anything that you would do differently? Or if somebody was going to do this race for a first time, you'd be like, oh, I wish I knew this.
Good question.
It didn't affect me at all, but like, you know, I certainly didn't, like I said, I overpacked. So I probably would have just, you know, put a few less things in the drop bag, but I got all that stuff back. So it didn't matter.
Sure. You did have a drop bag, right? So it's not like you were putting it in the vest and you were carrying all this extra fuel for 50 miles, thankfully.
Yeah. There was 3 drop bags, which was nice. And, you know, like a fair amount of the stuff that I put in the drop bags never even came out. But like I said, we got them back. So it's not like I lost any of that stuff. Right?
Cool.
I think we could have been more efficient in and out of some of the aid stations. I think there was three of us that were trying to run together. And Ultimately, John and I kind of went ahead, and Randy was a little bit behind, and he missed the last cutoff by like 5 minutes.
That's tough.
Yeah, that was, I was so bummed to hear that. And he was the, so the major thing that I would have changed what we did as a group was Randy was so much more efficient at the aid stations that we should have just let him go, and, you know, caught up if that was going to happen, because he was taking so much less time at them and then waiting for us. So I feel pretty bad about that, honestly. As far as anything else, I don't know. Like, honestly, you know, for me,
it was a good day.
It went about as well as I could have hoped. So yeah, I don't have a lot of things that I would, you know, have done differently.
Did
you guys use polls? Did you use polls?
I did not. I was joking around that, you know, I'm waiting to hear if I won my category, male 45 to 49, no polls division. There were not many people out there
without them.
I've never had a pair. I didn't feel like buying them and training with them and that sort of thing. So, you know, I went without them. But yeah, John and Randy both did, and lots and lots of other people out there did.
Very good. Very good. In all, we should say, it took you almost 15 hours. And so it is in no way like a short endeavor. Like I said before, I think there were 12,000 feet of elevation gain over the course of this entire course. And so that kind of begs the question for me, like, what's next? Do you want to do like a flat one now? Or maybe do you want to do a race that is about the same duration, but maybe more mileage? Like, what are you thinking is next for you?
Yeah, I think both of those possibilities have crossed my mind. You know, like there was just so much time spent hiking on this that having a race where, you know, more of it is spent running has some appeal to me, because that would just be a very different animal. For sure. And then, yeah, of course, like, you know, being foolish like I am, you know, you finish something like this and you're like, well, you know, can we go further? You know,
right.
So, you know, looking at 100Ks and that kind of thing. So I'm not going to rule it out, but there's nothing immediately on the horizon in terms of that. I would certainly consider doing the local 50 miler we have here, the Mountains to Sea Trail 50 that happened. It was just a couple of weeks before the Mitchell race. I actually paced for a little while with a guy I know that did the MST 100. I don't think I'm going to do that, but I would totally do the 50 of that, I would think. And you know, it's nice because it's local and I love those trails. So
very cool. Very
George
good.
Is about to head out on that trail this weekend, aren't you, George?
So maybe I'm trying to figure out how to make it work. I'd like to. I'm trying to figure out how to make it work for sure. Doug, we're psyched for you, man. Congratulations. This was a major achievement and we are excited to see what's next.
Yeah, thank you. This was great to talk to you guys about it, and certainly appreciate all the help coaching wise, and then getting
a couple
shout outs on the podcast in the weeks leading up. That was a really nice surprise as well. I had, you know, my friends that listen as well were all texting me about getting shout out on the pod. So
very cool. Yeah, great. Their heads are totally going to explode now that it's been all about you for the entire episode. So very good. Very good. And of course I look forward to seeing you. Did you say you are running the Tobacco Road Relay this year?
Yep. We'll be we got a couple of teams doing Tobacco Road Relay. So looking forward to that.
Awesome. Very good. The Tobacco Road Relay and the Blue Ridge Relay, Michelle, both finish at breweries. And so I will be buying you a drink, Doug. And I'm excited to do that.
Look
forward to it. That's pretty cool. You've never bought me a drink. I've finished a lot of races. It's okay, Doug.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks again for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast. Don't forget to check out our new website that we're building in early 2024, mostpleasantexhaustion.com.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pleasantpodcast or on Instagram at mostpleasantexhaustion. We're available on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends and don't forget to give us a rating. We also offer coaching services through MPE Coaching. You can reach out to us at pleasantpodcast@gmail.com, at mpecoach@gmail.com, or just click on the coaching link on the podcast website. Again, that's www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Blue Pineapple Travel. You can find them at bluepineappletravel.com, at facebook.com/bluepineappletravel, or on Instagram at bluepineappletravel. Check out High Echelon PC at highecheloncpa.com. Big thanks to our sponsor, Elemental Altitude. You can find them at elementalaltitude.com, on Instagram at elementalaltitude, or on Facebook at facebook.com/elementalaltitude. And finally, thanks to our newest sponsor, Bright Hair. You can find them at brighthair.com or on Instagram at bright.hair. On behalf of Michelle Frank and Eric Hall, thanks for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast.